Now it's time for Whispers, your number one source for all things paranormal, with your hosts, Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, and produced by the lovely Lola Miller. Whispers is brought to you by West Virginia Penitentiary Tours at the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. Unforgettable, historical, educational. Give us a call and tell us what you're thinking. Locally, 304-214-1600. Out of the area, toll free, 866-514-1600.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another wonderful, wonderful edition.
Now, wait a minute. Are you here?
I am here. I'm sitting right here.
You are here?
I'm back home, Lola.
My gosh, it's good to see you. I forgot what you look like.
A load of beautiful. That's what I look like.
Untanned.
I've been gone since last Wednesday. Last Wednesday. Yeah. I got home about midnight last night. Oh, it's been a long week.
We missed you.
Oh, I miss you too. Not Nick so much.
What?
He's got computer problems again.
No, actually, my computer's working fine. I just don't know why none of us can go online.
Yeah, Nick decided to unhook our internet source to bring it in here. Couldn't get it to work. We went back in there and plugged it in. It's still not working.
No, we couldn't find a plug-in. It would have worked in here fine.
Well, we're still on the internet.
Bum, 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 bum.
Because we are. KKX is on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our computers aren't, so we can't go there.
Yeah. So anybody listening in the chat room, if we're not there, that's why.
Well, go to WKKX.com and you can listen.
That's right.
We can't chat with
them. Oh, you can't chat. Oh, that's just going to break your heart.
The end of the world. All of our friends there in the chat room.
I will figure it out.
We'll miss you. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen. She's Lola Miller. It is 6:09 p.m.
Lovely Lola Miller.
The lovely. Did you hear the new intro? What do you guys think? He said it really slow, but
it's good.
It was me.
You've got something to complain about for everything.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Did too.
I went to Myrtle Beach. I didn't get to go to the beach that much, though. You're in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, I didn't
Whose
care.
Fault is it that you didn't drive 20 minutes to the beach? You, because you're lazy. We had a discussion about this at the hospital earlier, which I want to say my wife's grandmother, which my grandmother, of course, is in the hospital. They found cancer. They have breast cancer. So if everybody can keep her in your prayers, thoughts and prayers, she's out of the surgery and everything. She's doing well, but,
Wow.
Still in the hospital.
That was sobering.
I'm sorry.
Well, no. Certainly will keep her in our prayers. My goodness.
But we had a discussion about how Jordan's lazy.
You see what I have to deal with.
He agreed. I said, some woman come. I want to walk with you on the beach. Whoa.
Easy.
Think lazier.
think less walking. Let's segue to the beach. Which is really cool. We passed some police vehicles. They were driving like the Segway.
Yeah.
All policed out, like kind of like Paul Blart Mall Cop. It was pretty cool.
Wow, that is cool.
So they are actually using Segways as a police.
How do you chase somebody on one of those?
I'm going to get you.
They don't really go that fast, do they?
I guess it's about as fast as somebody running. I thought it was pretty
really?
Funny. He wasn't riding it. He was giving somebody a ticket. How would you feel getting pulled over on a Segway?
I'd be embarrassed. You mean to tell me I can't unrun this?
Yeah, I know. Right? Well, I mean, it was stop and go traffic. But I couldn't go to the beach too much because I got my finger tattoo redone.
Oh.
And I couldn't get it wet in the water because it was like just a couple days after when everybody went. So I was like sitting there. I was like, man, beach trips are not as fun when you can't enjoy
the beach. That's right.
But
you could have done that at home.
My last day there, I was like, you know what? Forget it. It was like Sunday. We all went out and we were just like, let's go to the beach. So that was funner.
Mm-hmm. Funner?
Funnest. Is that what's the correct?
That was the most fun.
Most fun. I brought Lola a gift, and she didn't even mention it.
Yes, I haven't given me time here. PD River Swamp Sauce. Flavor you can see.
Bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
But that's like a handmade, or a local thing.
Yeah.
Down there, and I wanted to make sure. I got you one, I got Nick one.
Sauce.
Yeah. And who doesn't like barbecue sauce, especially
Southern? I can't wait to use this.
Oh, me too. I bought myself a jar.
Did you?
Of course
you did.
Of course I
did. Foolish girl that I am. How dare I ask something like that? Well, thank you for that, though.
Well, you're welcome. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, we'd love to call or hear from you. 1-866-514-1600. Nick's slamming doors. And
no. Well, that's because he's
mad. I'm angry.
Yes, he is. Pammy, if you're listening, call now. Pam, me.
Who's Pam?
She's a friend of mine that has a ghost story that she's been dying to tell.
Oh, well, Jesus.
And every time I run into her, when should I call? And I think I told her to call at 7 today. But Pam, if you're listening, call now.
Yeah, we love to hear from you.
Yep.
That was my Captain Kirk. I'm sorry.
That's what it was?
Again. I'm such a nerd.
Oh, my.
All right. Now, I think I fixed our internet, so there you go. Look how good I am.
Is this Pammy? Yes. Let's hear that story, Pam.
Okay. This happened, I'm going to say, about 15 years ago. We lived out Big Willing Creek. I'm trying to remember all the details as best as I can. Me and my husband, we had just decided to go to bed, and I'd actually gone to bed about 5 minutes before he did. He was coming in to lay down, and I heard this noise as if somebody was walking through the house. We have hardwood floors out at the old house. It's like an old farmhouse. And before I could say, Dan, there's somebody in the house, he was out the door. And he always had it timed how fast he could get the guns and the bullets in the gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had the bullets one place and the gun somewhere else. So he had, like, down to a science, you know. So he's out there. And I'm, you know, got the covers up around my neck saying, oh, please don't let it be my brother. Because there was an apartment on the side of the house pulling a prank on us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then I thought, no, he knows Dan has a gun. So, you know. So anyway. So he's out there and he's rolling around. He said he rolled around like Rambo, you know, flipping from light.
He's going to love you for this.
Yeah.
You know that.
Oh, he tells this story the same way I do. I mean, we remember it pretty much the same, flipping on lights. And there was nobody in the house. Not more than 5 minutes later, we heard sirens coming from in front of the house. Here, a car had wrecked. And a girl was thrown through a T-top and died instantly.
Wow. Oh.
Me and my husband both feel like she walked through our house to cross over to the other side or whatever. I said, you know, that was just too unnerving, you know. It was kind of...
Wow.
Like,
wow.
Yeah. Like, as soon as you said that, like, my whole body just, like, flooded with, like, chill bumps.
I know.
Right. Right. Well, the house was eerie in some parts, but I never felt like I was unsafe there or... scared to be there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I sometimes I get drunk and try to talk to the ghost, you know what I mean? But no, you know, it never happened when you would want it to, of course. You know, sometimes I'd see like shadows and the cat would just like freak out like Halloween Kitty and hiss and squall in the middle of the room for no reason that I, you know, was apparent to me.
Yeah.
There was one other time in the house. At this time my cousin was living in the apartment on the side of the house. And I don't remember whether there was, like, thunderstorms or whatever, like electricity was flashing on and off to cause this. But all of a sudden, he wasn't there. I was alone in the house, and his stereo came on, like, really loud, booming with a song.
No.
And it was a very popular song at the time, but it was still, like I said, a little eerie. You know what song it was?
It's right. Getting hot in here.
Mm-bop.
No, it was the one that says, I'm still alive.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I would have been freaking.
And like I said, I didn't feel nervous or scared. That freaked me out a little bit, and I couldn't find how to turn his stereo off because it was like remote control. So I actually unplugged it from the wall and kind of ran back over to my house, you know, my part of the house.
Oh, wow.
But I think that house has some history to it or something. My aunt, you know, she had an experience one time when she lived there where she had a dream about her boyfriend that was killed in Vietnam. And he told her in her dream that he would take care of her father and his. Well, his father had already passed away and her father hadn't. And it was not too long after that that her father passed away. She claims when she woke up the next morning, there were Lucky Strike cigarettes in the ashtray, and he was the only one that they knew that smoked Lucky Strikes. So,
wow.
Yeah, this was out Big Willing Creek, and I understand that one of our friends that has a house closer to the creek, his house was built on an Indian burial ground, because when they were adding like a garage or something, they uncovered some bones.
Ooh.
So, I mean, I think that was in the newspaper. You know what I mean? Because they had to come and they had excavate it and all that kind of stuff. So
they were Indian bones.
I think so.
Were they able to trace them? Do you know?
I don't know. I think this was years and years ago.
Oh.
You know? So I mean, it's interesting. My cousin lives out there. I haven't heard any other stories, but I haven't asked either. But
now, do you have any kids?
I do. I have an 8-year-old. Yeah.
Now, has your 8-year-old had any experiences in your house?
We moved from that house 10 years ago. Just the weirdness with the cat and that experience. My husband, if it was just me that heard these things or witnessed it or whatever, experienced it, I would have been just like, oh, well, you know, it's just the wind or something. But my husband heard the exact same thing. And then with the girl dying, and, you know, I just think it was like a safe haven for her to walk through at that point. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is weird. I'm glad you called, Pam.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd want to go out and test things out there. My aunt still owns the house. I don't know. Maybe that could be brought up to them. See if you guys could sit around and call, you know.
Well, ask her. Ask her.
I will.
Okay.
I will. Okay.
Let me know.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks,
thank
Pam.
You.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, that would be crazy.
Yeah, it would.
I'm just going to say it. Drinking and spirit contact, don't miss. Don't do it. You don't put the spirits with the spirits.
Don't cross your spirits? Like, don't cross your streams?
Yeah, don't cross your streams. I don't know.
That was dumb.
I'm sorry. It sounded a lot better in my head.
Again.
Again.
I need to stop listening to that. So,
like so many of Nick's ideas, they sound better in his head.
That one would have worked earlier. No. Train. This bullet. No, never mind.
Huh?
I don't know.
We have a new caller? Or is this our guest? All righty. Our guest tonight, Mr. Christian Fedor. He is a political refugee out of Chile. He lives in Australia now. He is a contactee, investigates abductions.
He's a prospective director of ICAR in Australia, which is the International Community for Alien Research.
Christian,
are you with us?
There you go.
Christian?
Yeah.
How you
good
doing?
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm very good. Good morning. Just getting over the flu, mate.
Was it the swine flu?
No, no such luck. Basically, like you said, I'm no longer the prospective. I'm actually the director of ICAR here in Australia. And as you said, ICAR is the International Community for Alien Research.
Well, congratulations.
Well, I'm very honored, actually. I've been on the website of ICAR for a little while, just checking what they do and spoken to the people on Pal Talk and all that. And I've had an interest in this all my life, really, because of the things that I've experienced. And basically, that's how it is for me. You know, I think I said to you that my first encounter with the visitors, aliens, whatever you want to call them, the ultra-terrestrials, the extraterrestrials, that began for me very early when I was a small child.
How old would
you say you
were?
The thing is that I have a very good recall because of a near-death experience that I had when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And due to that, people say that you see your life run in front of you when you die, and you know I can actually attest to that, that it is true.
Wow.
That experience actually showed me literally that when I was a very small child, I was being visited by beings, you know, and you'll excuse my accent because like you stated, I am actually from Chile. And,
I think your accent's cool. I'm liking this.
I'm glad you do. I'm glad you do. I was afraid that my accent would be a hindrance for people understanding what I'm trying to talk to you about. Like I said, to give you a recap, and for the audience listening, I forgot to say hello and thank you for listening to me, and thanks to the guys at iCar and to Montaldo and Linda. I really appreciate, you know, that they have given me the chance and the opportunity to be able to be a part and you know, to participate in the goals, you know, in the aims of ICAR, which is to basically bring more, how can I say this, you know, more to illuminate what we believe to be true about, or, sorry, I'm choosing the wrong words.
That's okay.
To show people what really alien contact is all about.
Uh-huh.
And John Montel has described it as the alien agenda. Other people have different views on that and what it is. I think there's a multiplicity of different views on what aliens are all about, and that, you know, as you know, the opinions are as multiple as how many people are on the planet. You know, everyone's got a different opinion.
Yeah.
You know, you would realize that. I mean, you're on air all the time, and you get different stories. And you know, like, I just became the director here in Australia, and I had a, you know, well, personally, I've seen many people talking about many different things, all of them claiming that they know what's going on.
Can you tell us some of your personal experiences with your contacts?
Yeah. My first contact was when I was literally 3 years old.
Uh-huh.
And this basically occurred in my bedroom. You see, as you said, I am a political refugee, and the reason for that is because my father was kidnapped when I was very young, at the same age, when I was 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my family, my mother and my other brothers, were alone in the house most of the time when this was occurring. My father ended up going missing because of what was going on in my country back then, back in 73.
Yes.
And during those days, my recall is that at night, the middle of the night, basically, you know, at the magic hour, I call it, around 3, I would basically be woken up by being no taller than 3 foot.
Yeah, wow.
Or half a meter. But they were actually the ones that the robed little monks, you know, I call them monks because they look like a tiny little monk. You understand what I'm saying?
You say it was 6 foot and looked like a monk?
No.
Half a meter. A half a meter.
Okay.
So teeny yeah. tiny, like munchkins.
Okay. I'm sorry. The conversions.
Some people call them munchkins, yeah.
Well.
Munchkin mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. They're very short. Very short.
Okay.
About 3 foot. Literally, these things would wake me up by pulling my legs.
Oh, jeez.
And, yeah, I would feel a pull on my leg, you know, and you literally wake up startled, and I'm a three-year-old boy, you know, and I'm just in shock looking at this thing. You know, just remembering this is just a bit disconcerting because it's...
No, it was pulling on your foot, what exactly were you doing? Like, was it wanting you to go with you or go with them, or was it trying to pull you off?
I think it actually wanted me to know that it was there, that it was about to do whatever it was about to do.
Oh.
But you got to understand that this would happen just about all the time while for about a year, you know?
Wow.
You got to realize that I was only 3 years old. And
it's amazing that you can remember it in the first place as a three-year-old.
Well, like I said, the near-death experience showed me my entire life from when I had my near-death experience. Basically, it was because I was drowning in a river, which, by the way, is the same place where I had my first UFO sighting.
Oh, wow. You
know? Yeah.
How old were you then?
And let me, then I was 8 years old.
Oh, okay.
But okay. The other unbelievable thing for me, which is a congruence or a correlation to all of the events that I've had in my life, is that that same place where I had my first sighting the year before when I was 7 years old with my uncle and a bunch of other kids, was also the place where they actually murdered my father.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
And I had no idea about that until when I came back to Australia, because there was a book that was published by the the lawyer that got us out of the country and who was studying the case,
uh-huh.
In a sense. Like, this was like 10 years later when I came back to, when I came to Australia back in 86.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so literally the reason why I have that recall is because of a near-death experience, and what they would do, these creatures, was literally they would put their hands on my stomach, and they would do this every single time.
Hmm.
And what was really shocking for me is that the hands was like a mitten, like it was just three fingers, but in a glove.
Yeah.
Was deathly cold. Like the feeling of the cold hands on my stomach was just unbearable.
Hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep, I do.
And as soon as this happened, I was just consciousness.
Wow.
And this happened so many times. I was just scared to death to sleep in that bedroom. So I had a dog, a German Shepherd, that I would keep. That I had in my house, but I decided to like bring it into the room because, as I said to you, my father was not home back then,
right.
Because he was being chronically kidnapped. To be tortured and to be all of these things. Anyway, so I had my dog there. Her name was Laika, like the first dog in space. yeah, because my grandma actually met Yuri Gagarin, the first astronaut, and my whole family was very political, very, you know, in parentheses, communist. So that's why I've got a middle name that's Russian or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder where the fedora came from.
That's right.
Okay.
Very political family. Anyway, so I was saying that I had my dog in the room, but when this next event occurred, I was actually woken up not by the beings touching my stomach again,
mm-hmm.
but by my dog. Basically just becoming crazy. Began to like yelp, and all of a sudden that stopped, and then the cold hands came back on my stomach.
What'd they do to the dog?
Well, my dog never wanted to come into the house ever again.
Oh, jeez.
I bet.
It ran away.
It did. Oh, mine would too.
You know, so this thing about keeping dogs and feeling that they're going to, you know, stop the event for anyone, I have doubts on that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, did they do something to your dog, or do you think that just the sight of them scared your dog so much?
I think my dog was just scared to death, you know? So, because of, you know, I know now from experience that during ET encounters or events, the atmosphere...
Uh-huh.
In the area changes, you know, it becomes very cold, and like I said, it changes. There's light changes, the light source in the room changes. I mean, most people say that there's light coming from an unknown source, you know,
mm-hmm.
and really? This is basically part of the what you call or use the terminology. You know, one of the factors involved in the actual abduction, there are things that are normally used as to correlate the events with other cases, so we can draw a you know, a relation between fact and imagination, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically what most researchers do, and you can compare it with, like, the police, which is basically, you know, an investigative, how can I put it? We are investigators, and we do literally the same thing. So we investigate cases, and I'm sure you are aware of what ICO does, you know, so I don't think I need to go into any more detail on that.
Right. So when have you actually gone away? What, have they taken you away? Or just at least, like, from your room?
Well, yes, but the thing is that there are so many things that I could say regarding that, that I'd rather leave that and not actually talk about it too much, because I could go into a tangent and tell you that I was taken, that I was walking inside a spaceship. I don't want to actually acknowledge that right now, because I do have the experiences. But
wow.
One thing is has to be understood. The aliens, the ET groups that come to Earth, like the Greys or the amphibian reptilian, or the Munchkins, you know, whatever. But one thing you got to understand, is this, that, for example, the Munchkins, they're actually in the folk stories of my country. They have an actual name for them.
Really? What is that?
And they do exactly what we say that the aliens do, which is to kidnap and to make people and ladies pregnant. And then the girls come back. You know, they
damn
exactly
guys, honestly.
What's that?
I said, damn guys, honestly. You know, they're the same everywhere.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Well, they're, you know, they're always looking for a nice looking lady. Yeah. Look, all I can say to you regarding that is that they control what you perceive.
Uh-huh.
They control what you see, what you feel, what you smell. Well, not all the time, but that we use that as part of the abduction criteria.
Now, do you think
we don't know with any certainty that these entities, what they may be, were they extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, terrestrial, or any of these ones, you know, or a mixture of those. Two, we don't know that the aliens, we do know that the aliens lie, because they have they have told so many different stories to people, you know. They lied to, they lied to me back in the late 90s. They made me think that I was one of them. They made me think that what I was seeing about myself was my higher self. And later on, I realized when I was actually awake and my consciousness was clear, that it was not me being an alien, or that it was not, you know, higher self and other people's higher selves or spirits coming to see me, but it was actually the gray and the doctors of the gray, you know. Maybe you don't know about this, or maybe you do, I don't know, but perhaps someone's already spoken about this. I would assume that they have in your show, that the grays, who are not actually gray, they are blue gray, and that's a cold blue, nor a warm blue. These creatures have a hierarchy, and that hierarchy is exemplified by their height, from small, short to tall. And apparently the tallest ones are the most intelligent of them, or the ones that are in more control. Okay?
Okay.
I think that's, you can find that through the research of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and all the stuff that John Montella has spoken about. Joe is very clear on that. Mr. Daryl Sims is also very clear on that is actually actually the way the Greys are, how can I put it, how they have a caste system, how they are classified. The shortest ones are the ones that work, or they have almost no sentient powers, capacity to think for themselves, and I think that's very controlling of whoever created them. And as they get taller, they have different roles and different tasks that they do according to the what they are doing on the planet here, because it seems to be a very multifaceted program that they have for people, so complex that it is probably for a human mind nearly impossible to really comprehend. And but we're trying. The other thing is that they will disguise the encounter using false screen memories, and that's what I have actually experienced lately, because I've decided to take all of my experience seriously, because before I didn't want to accept what actually happened to me, because I was raised as a Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, and Catholics don't believe in aliens. You know, it's either angels and demons, and that seems to be a big problem right now.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You had said earlier that they could control, you know, what you think, what you smell, what you taste, everything, correct?
Yeah.
Is there a possibility, you think, that instead of actually taking you onto a ship of some type that you are, that they made you think that you were, perhaps they have a place on, you know, on the earth, on earth where they, you know, take people. I mean, is there any possible, or even kept you in your room? Do you think anything like that, you know, just to kind of throw off your perceptions of where you were or what they were actually doing?
Well, the short answer to that is yes. And there is a multiple scenario that you can actually experience when you are being visited by these beings, or when you are being taken by these entities. And I have read many accounts from Spanish sources. A lot of the accounts are when people are that basically people are awake. Around about 75% of the Hispanic ET encounters are actually when a person is actually awake, literally awake, and they are also, they seem to happen to Latin American people in their houses, in their own homes. And it's different from the Anglo British view, because, or experiences, because it seems that the ET prefers to knock the people out when if they happen to be in an American city, or in the UK, or in a European. I don't understand why that is, but I guess it's another throw off. You know, it's something else that could be understood as just another mixture of how the entities, aliens, like to confuse us, you know, giving us a throw off. We'll do this here and we'll do this over there, and they won't know what we're really trying to do, because we're always doing something, you know, completely different. But the fact is that it's always the same thing. They always do. The encounters seem to have, you know, a program step to it. They do exactly the same things. And when you talk to any contactee, they'll tell you that they have experienced this and they have experienced that. Give me a second. My daughter just lost speech.
Oh, no, that's okay.
That's really interesting stuff.
Sounds like a cute kid.
It sounds like a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder if they...
Sorry, guys. I've got a little daughter.
Oh, how old is she?
Oh, she's 2 years old.
Oh, man. Just starting the terrible
crazy
twos. Oh.
Yeah. She's, you know, she's full of energy.
Yes. Aren't they, though?
Yeah.
Now, if I could ask a question, how do you differentiate? Because you said you don't want to admit that you have been in the spacecraft walking around or anything like that. How do you differentiate what's real and what you think might not be?
Well, that takes, we have to, I have to personally analyze everything that I have experienced all the time. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. That's, I analyze myself on a constant basis to see if I am not being confused, to make sure that what I experienced was real by running a comparison of congruences with other cases. So I can tell you that, yes, I've walked on a UFO, that I've seen children in there, that I have been taught how to levitate objects, small objects, with other children. I have also an X-ray implant in my foot, and I should have told you that when I was awake back in my implant experience, that's the point where I said in my email to you that that's what broke the camel's back for me, because I realized that it was not the my higher self visiting me, but it was actually the gray. Wow. And I had no idea what the gray were, but from that point onwards, a gray, I'll be honest, a great fear came over me, because it forced me to acknowledge this, to acknowledge the reality of the visitations of these entities. And it took me 8 years before I got the courage to get the X-ray. And for 8 years, I was saying to myself, I must get an X-ray. But it was like something was stopping me to do it. It's like you have programs running in the back of your head that they put in there to stop you from doing, from acting on your will.
I know one person, one of our chat rooms asked, could your encounters at all be, you know, influenced, you know, anything to do with like a post-traumatic stress disorder? I guess maybe stemming from almost drowning, you know, and you're also your father's death. Could that be a possibility at all, or?
Well, you could say that for the experience that I had when I was a young kid.
Uh-huh. Sure.
But how is it that at the same spot where I drowned, I had my first UFO sighting, mm-hmm. with my uncle and a bunch of other children and a busload of people? And that same area in Chile, in the south of the capital, is now become, according to the tourism and the government of Chile, the UFO hotspot number one to visit.
Wow.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, I do.
Okay, what? So that's a correlation for you. And if I'm imagining the implant, why is it that I can see it with an X-ray?
Yeah.
No, have you usually post-traumatic stress.
Have you been able to, like, have you asked anybody to take it out? Like, maybe surgery to take it out to see what it is? Or?
We are actually, I have people here who are also interested in Australia, mm-hmm. Interested in, who are also authors of different books. And, for example, I've got a personal friend of mine who is the author of Hair of the Alien. Which is an event that occurred like about 15 minutes from where I live, back in the late 80s. Mm. And Mr. Bill Chalker, the author of Hair of the Alien, took that case, and with the help of very rich friends, you could say, done the forensic work on the hair, and it was discovered that the hair had three different DNAs.
Really?
Inside of it, in it. The hair was built with three different DNAs. And one of them was Basque. The other one was Asian, Mongolian, a very, very rare type of Mongolian DNA, which happens to have, it simplifies itself as blonde Asians.
Oh, wow.
And the other one was, I think it was Celtic. I'm not quite clear on that one, but what's very interesting for me is that the Basque DNA,
yeah,
seems to be, or the Basque, in parentheses, the Basque people from South Spain seem to be part of a lot of stories relating to, connected with alien encounters and alien stories and UFO landings. And maybe you're not aware of that, but there is Dr. Carla Turner, she passed away some time ago, wrote a few books, three books, and one of the main books that she always was trying to tell, one of her best books, I think, is Masquerade of Angels. And in Masquerade of Angels, there's a story of a gentleman that has a friend, and this friend, he basically found out later that this friend was related to the Basque. But this lady friend, a very beautiful one too, happens to be, let's just say, a hybrid.
Oh. Now, how many of them have they got running around?
Who knows? But this lady, her name was Maya, was using the same name in other cases in Europe and in the States. So this is a hybrid calling itself Maya.
Now, when you're, for those that aren't sure, you know what a hybrid is. What exactly would you, how would you classify a hybrid? They're mixing with us, or?
The only way we can classify hybrids is by how they appear to us. There are different kinds of hybrids as well, because it seems that the three main alien races, the gray, the amphibian, because I should say amphibian, they're not reptilian, and I'm trying to be very clear, because for Icar's sake, and the work has already been established that the reptilians are not reptilian, they're amphibians, thanks to John Montalvo. And the other ones who happen to be or look more human, but a lot less human than what we would like to think.
Wow.
So there's three races, right? And all of them, they have a hybrid program.
Hey, Christian, we got a phone call real quick with a question.
Yep.
Okay, this is a guy he has a show on our station too on NASCAR, but this is Luggy.
Hello, Christian. Thanks for calling.
How are you?
Good. First off, I just want to say I'm not a believer, but I'm open-minded, so I like to listen definitely to these guys' show. But I have a question for you.
Yep.
This is one of the things that's always gotten me. If aliens do visit the planet, wouldn't they really visit the places that are most populated? And by that, I mean, wouldn't you think you would see them in the ocean more than on the land? I mean, there's more life in the ocean than there is on land. So I was always interested in why there was never any reports of, you know, ships or whatever over the ocean or something like that. You know, that, and that's the question I had. And thanks for the answer.
Thanks, Luggy.
Thanks, Luggy.
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, they get seen in cities, in very populated cities, because it has already been established by ICAR that is a city is of high population. I mean, basically, there is the most sightings where UFOs are concerned is, for example, Mexico City. And that's because it's one of the most highest populated cities on the planet, the largest city on the planet as well. And you have a lot of people there from many different racial backgrounds. you literally say just about all the racial backgrounds there. I'm sure that according to the grade, I would be, or the age, whatever, they would be very interested in being able to just walk, to go to one place and be able to gather as much samples as possible, because it's like a smorgasbord of DNA in there, you know, in a big city. You know, it's easy. You know, it saves energy. It's it is logical to do that. To if you're interested in human beings and what we have as most precious, which is our collective genetic makeup, is would be a very good idea to actually go where there's many of us. You know, not where it's like two or three, where you know, where everyone's related.
Yeah, that's true.
Or plus, you know, the higher.
And the other part of the question, I think, was the oceans, whether we would see them in the oceans, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we do. They're called USOs.
They're called
And the USOs.
Oh, okay.
Unidentified submergible objects, or?
Yeah, that's right. You said it. And look, in my country and in Australia, they're constantly reported. For example, in Chile, they are constantly reported around the islands, and apparently they change the makeup of the water, making it very smelly.
Really?
Yeah.
And we were actually somebody on our chat room here earlier was talking about all the stuff that he sees in the water. He's in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the stuff that he sees.
I'm not surprised. I think that there is a lot that needs to be understood about the oceans. We know more about the surface of the moon than we do about the surface of our oceans, you know? And that's, I think, rather obvious. There are areas in the ocean, you know, that are so deep that no human and no machine has ever been able to go in there.
Yeah.
But you still see creatures that seem to come from there, like, you know, underwater, well, luminescent jellyfish, things like that. You know, life is still going on down there. And it seems like UFOs also like to go into the oceans, into very deep, deep water. This is already being reported by navies all around the world anyway, so it's not something new. But it seems to be new now.
Well, that movie, The Abyss, was about that. You know, that instead of being, a ship on the surface of the planet, it was down in the depths of the ocean.
Yeah, that's what they call that, don't they? Don't they call it, like, the deepest part of the abyss?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I mean, if you can go out into deep space,
uh-huh.
You have the technology for that. Why would it not be so very easy?
Yeah.
To travel to a planet that has a lot of water, especially if you happen to like water, and you decide to create a base very deep underwater, or perhaps you have created a whole city underwater, and you've created a cave of gigantic proportions.
Yeah.
And you live in there, and you have people living in there, or human beings living there as well, together with aliens.
Down under the water.
Yeah, read between the lines, you know?
Okay. Wow, that's a different way to look at it, I guess. Now,
yeah.
You said this has been going on for your whole life. You know, you've had these experiences. Do you document every time? Like, do you have, like, a notepad next to your bed that every time it happens?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about the latest. Yes, I do. It is very, very important. Okay. That whoever gets involved in this, that they must document mm-hmm. everything that they dream. They have to document all their thoughts, not all of them, but the thoughts that they think are most important in relation to the subject or what they are interested within the subject, you know. For example, my first documentation was that I needed to get an X-ray.
We have 2 minutes left there, Christian.
Yeah. All right. So basically, you document everything that you have.
Uh-huh.
You try and make sense of your dreams by looking at the documentation that you've written down. I've basically gone to a psychologist to see if I'm crazy. I am not.
See, and that would be my first thought, too, saying, is that I'm nuts.
Okay. So basically, you got to do that. You got to check yourself mentally. You got to make sure that what you have experienced is real and that your mind is not fooling you, at least to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
And write down your dreams, because if you visit a hypnotherapist, the best thing to use as a recall, to recall your memories, is to be able to write them down so you can remember, or at least you have some form of being able to go back to that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to write it down. And that way, if you're willing to go through hypnotherapy to remember some of these hidden memories that you may have in there, you need to basically write everything down. I got to repeat that because it's very important.
Write it down.
It's like if you write it down, it's like a time machine. Your mind will be able to go to that point in time.
Yeah.
Just because you wrote it down and you remember.
Yeah. Now, Christian.
It's like, kind of like a time machine, really.
Christian, if any of our listeners in Australia want to get a hold of you to make a contact with you to share stories or need help, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, you can actually, first of all, you got to go to the ICA webpage.
Okay.
And that's CICAR1@cox.net.
Okay.
ICAR1@icar1.com. I'm sorry about that.
ICAR1.com.
Yeah, just Google it, because I Googled it and it came right up.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Radio is tough getting used to it first. That is all the time we got today. We have to cut for the news. So I want to thank you very much for being with us.
No problem.
Oh, Lila?
I just want to say I'd love to have you back again, because there are still questions that I have, and I know some other listeners have some more questions too, so we'd love to have you back again.
Yeah, we're definitely
going to. I would love to do that.
We're going to keep in contact and make sure that we keep the conversations going. Thank you very much, Mr. Fedor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
I love his voice.
I do, too.
That was
I do
fun.
Too.
All right, you're listening to Whispers Radio on AM 1600, WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We'll be right back after some CNN. The former West Virginia Penitentiary housed some of the most violent criminals in history. Many of the prisoners who lived there also died there. It is known for being one of the most bloody institutions in the United States. Don't miss your chance to experience the former West Virginia Penitentiary. Your tour will consist of an astonishing 90 minutes that offers an awesome history, a touch of art, cold hard facts, and an education of the justice system. Tours start 11 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. For more information, go to www.wvpentours.com or call them at 304-843-4146.
Now it's time for Whispers, your number one source for all things paranormal, with your hosts, Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, and produced by the lovely Lola Miller. Whispers is brought to you by West Virginia Penitentiary Tours at the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. Unforgettable, historical, educational.
Everybody, and welcome back to Whispers on AM 1600, WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
I was going to do it, but he was mad at me earlier. He's like, I miss it. I was gone for an entire week, and I didn't get to host. And
what
I'm
are
like,
y'all going to do the week I'm not here?
Cry.
We're going to cry. It's going to be like the sobbing hour.
I thought about pulling a Jordan.
What was that? Calling in? You should.
You should call in. It'd be wonderful.
The call-in producer.
It'll be
take the
one,
board with you.
1 week. Yeah. It'll be the 1 week. It'll be like Stephen King or something. You know,
let me see. What do I have that week?
That's what I'm always afraid of.
We know.
I call in. I don't
usually
care.
When you tell me you're going to be gone, I try for like, well, our first hour is Dean Koontz. And our second hour is Obama. Barack Obama, he's like,
well, I only have 60 minutes of time left on my card, so I'll get the first hour.
Dean Koontz, I'm not too sure about the press.
No, they won't return my calls.
It's like, when are you going to release? No.
Yeah, I know it.
Where are the tapes?
I know about the next Odd Thomas book.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know who Terry Goodkind is?
No.
Okay, never mind.
All right, give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area,
we'll talk later.
304.
I try.
No, it's not even 304.
So how do you like the cookies, by the way?
Oh, they are so good.
And the best part, neither Steve nor Jordan like coconut.
I know.
So guess who gets all of them?
I know, we do. We get to share. We get to share.
Thank you to Renee Eddy.
Yes, thank you, Renee Eddy. Because they are so good. Butterscotch.
We're working through them.
I'm going to have to scrape the coconut off and eat one.
I don't understand why you wouldn't. What is so bad about coconut?
Don't you like Almond Joys or Mounds Bars? I love them
when there's no coconut.
That's all they are is coconut.
Well, I like chocolate.
See, the problem is Almond Joys have nuts.
Mounds don't.
But you know what they both have?
Chocolate.
Yeah.
And chocolate.
Chocolate.
Guess what those have? Chocolate, coconut, butterscotch. Mm-hmm. There's 7 layers of goodness.
Yes, they are.
I don't know what all the layers are.
You know what?
Why are we
trying to talk him into tasting one?
I don't know.
We're silly. We want
like
to keep them to
him.
Ourselves.
They're horrible, Jordan.
Lola keeps saying, shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
Oh, Tuesdays I love to eat. I just get so much good food.
I was listening to that today. Mm-hmm. There was people bringing you food since Bill's show.
I know. River City takes great care of me, Tom, Becky, and Jason. Every Tuesday they come in. They know it's my long day. So they come in. Today I have homemade chicken and dumplings. Oh. And then a spring salad that has mandarin oranges, feta cheese, candied pecans, and their wonderful homemade raspberry vinaigrette.
Mm.
That I have, and I usually always get raspberry vinaigrette if it's on the menu. This is by far the best I have ever had.
Where's that from?
Tom brought me a whole big thing of it.
Where's that, River City?
Uh-huh.
All right. Go there, get you some raspberry vinaigrette.
Absolutely. Get the spring salad. It's really, really good. Really good.
Well, and then Steve brings in pizza. Is that Steve?
Yes, John Angus from Angusville sent us down a DeCarlo's pizza. Yes.
And we get cookies.
Well, just because...
We get the dessert. Come on, people. All right, Nikki.
Yes.
What are you doing?
I am talking to someone on the chat room. I'm sorry. It's an interesting story.
All right, I didn't get the long-distance number out because I kept getting interrupted. It's 1-866-514-1600 if anybody out there wants to call.
And local, 214-1600. Put a 304 in front of that. I wanted to contribute. I'm sorry.
I'm glad. Nick's feeling more comfortable giving the numbers out.
I did great last week. I was going to kick you off out of the hosting chair.
Lola, he tried. He's like, hey, you think this week I can sit over there and do the...
Oh, for goodness.
You know what I said?
I had the computer.
No.
he got a tear.
I said, sure, you can next week when I'm not going to be there again.
You're not going to be here next week?
No, my band's...
Oh, that's right. You're on tour.
Yeah, my band's going on tour for a week.
Wow.
We won't be there.
That's awesome, though.
It's been a busy summer.
Yes, it has. For you.
Yeah.
How many times have you been to the beach now? Two?
What? I don't know what you're talking about. All right, Nikki, you want to introduce our guest?
Our next guest is Laura Cutlett. She's an author. She's going to be talking with us about ghosts, reincarnation, past lives, all kinds of stuff.
All righty.
Okay, Laura, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing, Laura?
I'm doing excellent.
And I want to thank you for coming on with us. I know it was very short notice, but we're excited to have you here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, our guests all got mishmashed there at the last minute.
Well, Laura, people can't tell Pacific time from Eastern Standard Time or Eastern Daylight Time. What, you know.
I think that was my fault.
It was Nick.
Yeah.
And yes, I do have a problem.
Yes, we always blame Nick for everything.
I'm putting a poster up and putting lines down it next time. Mm-hmm. So,
Laura, thank you very much.
Yes.
Yes, thanks for being with us.
So tell us about your books.
Well, I started writing almost 20 years ago. I got the idea
for
these novels, and it has blossomed. It's taken on a life of its own, and the first novel starts in Middleburg, Virginia in 1979. and it's going to stretch to present day.
Wow.
I've written five separate stories, which comprise the three novels.
Wow. What are they about?
Well, it's, you know, the meat and potatoes of it is good characters, an interesting storyline, and a little bit of mystery. The icing on the cake and the dessert is really the ghosts and the paranormal world, which I write about. You know, a lot of, you know, you go to these horror flicks and there's, you got the young 20-year-old girl getting chased by the guy with the axe and the end. it's nothing like that. These are real stories with good characters. And, you know, I like to compare it to my favorite TV show, Lost. Because what I like about Lost is the character development. And in like these characters, there's a mystery around them and then you find out about them.
Yeah.
Well, I started writing like that. Couple of years ago, before I ever saw Lost, but you have that kind of character development.
Uh-huh.
I love that kind of thing in a book too, because you're right. If it's just all the surface stuff, you read it, you're done. You don't remember it, and you could care less if there's a sequel or another book that's even written in that genre. You know, but
when
it's great characters, they become almost like family.
Well, they are to me.
Yeah. Well,
but
yeah.
You know, haven't you gone to these, you know, a horror movie or, you know,
all the time.
You feel like they should be paying me or at least give me my money back when I left.
Yes.
Oh, I love that's my favorite type of movie
in the world. But Jordan, some of them are bad.
Yeah.
Jordan, you get the worst movies. I've come to your house. I look at the DVDs. I'm going, this doesn't even look real. The box that it comes in.
You have to understand who's sitting in here. You know,
the cheesier, the better.
Yes, he likes those
gosh.
Ones where you can tell it's styrofoam rocks.
Oh my gosh,
you know.
The zipper down and the strings and the fake blood. it cracks me up. I can't. I love it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
While I'm plugging my book, I want to add one thing. In my books, I mean, there is excitement, but there's also, it's not so gothic where there isn't a sense of humor. There's a lot of humorous situations, even in tragedy, even in my first book. And you have the central character is really the story, and the main character doesn't emerge to the second part of the book. So it's written a little bit different, and my technique is cinematic writing. So I'm hoping that one day they'll be made into a good horror flick.
There we go. That's a good goal.
Oh yeah.
Now, when you sit down to write, I mean, what's your inspiration? What is it
well,
that
I
you
tell
sit
you,
down?
You know, if they write a book about me, Nick, it's going to be called The Accidental Writer. I'm totally dyslexic. I flunked out of junior college and nursing school, and I went off to New York to be a model, and I never thought about writing, even though I was always figuring out stories. Like, you know, when I go to a movie, I'd say, oh, this could be different or that could be different. So about, 20 years ago, I had this idea, and I actually dreamt part of the book. And I talked to a couple of friends of mine, and they said, they gave me some encouragement. Well, why don't you start writing?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wrote out a storyline, and I asked a friend of mine who is a pretty big writer up in New York, do you think this is worthwhile? And he said, you know, I like it. Go with it. Well, 20 years later, you know, I finished it. I guess I'm a slow typer. it took a while. You know, it's like a pot roast. You know, you put in all the ingredients and you have to let it simmer before it's edible and on the table.
Well, what are the names of the books?
Well, the first book is called The Near-Death Connection. And some of the characters in the book have had a near-death experience. Now, my books vary from are very different from other horror or ghost stories. Is that I've done a tremendous amount of paranormal research so that I could get these things right, so I can nail it on the head. And in each of one of my books, and each story, there is a real paranormal experience that I have had.
Okay.
So.
Now,
I don't believe in UFOs and Bigfoot, and my dog down the street isn't giving me secret messages.
Are you sure you're not listening hard enough?
maybe it is going on, but you're too afraid to let it in.
Hey, don't laugh. That's what they keep accusing me of. So
have you listened to the show before?
Well, the thing is, I was the most skeptical person on planet Earth about ghosts and the paranormal. even though I'd heard stories through my family, some of my relatives that are deceased. But I had a terrible accident when I was in my late teens where I died and I was resuscitated.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it was amazing I wasn't killed. I was galloping in a field with a horse, and I fell face first into a ditch off the horse.
Ooh.
And other than a broken nose and hand, I had the classic near-death experience. After that is when I had started having personally paranormal events. And you're thinking, wow, was this cool? It was so disturbing that I even went to a shrink, and I thought I had a brain tumor. And I was so, unnerved by it because it just, was freaky.
Yeah.
But over the years, I've gotten a sense of humor, developed a sense of humor about it.
Well, you have to, you're going to drive yourself crazy about it.
Yeah,
it is pretty cool, too, though, after a while. I'm starting to, I've gotten a real rhythm with this the last 15 years.
Now, a lot of people with near-death experience say they get, some kind of psychic ESP type of thing. Do you ever have any of that?
Yes, but I always, when I'm picking out the lotto number, saying, oh, please. But so far,
yes,
I have. I've had, it's really weird things. And let me tell you, when you want it to happen, it never does. And when it does, it's not the way you'd hoped it would be. It's just sort of comes into your life sideways. That's the only way I can say. But I have gotten one situation where it saved my life.
Really?
Yes.
How?
Yeah.
Well, how did it save your life?
Well, it was just a couple of months ago. I was coming out of the hospital, the local hospital from where I live.
Uh-huh.
Before I was pulling into the hospital and going in for something, and there was this man in a car, and the way he was looking at me, I rolled up the windows, your usual overreaction for a woman.
Uh-huh.
And I got a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. Went into the hospital, came out a few hours later, didn't see him, went to get a pizza, and he had followed me, waited for me for hours and followed me in the pizza shop and pulled out in front of me. And I heard this voice say, he's going to kill you. Now, ooh. I mean, I know this sounds crazy. So what I did is I just sped around and I went to a public place, called the police, and kind of fell apart after that. But I really believe that something made me turn to my left to see this man, and sort of, one of those warnings, one of those light bulb moments, you're in danger, girl. And but that's about the most dramatic one, I would say, life-saving one that ever happened to me.
Boy, and I would believe that, too. I would believe that, too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay, now I have a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the email you sent me, you have a haunted horse farm for sale on eBay.
Well, okay, this is where my sense of humor kicks in, and reality. It's sort of like a collision course. Before I went to a publisher, I realized, number one, you have to have an internet footprint, which is cruel to people that are technically challenged like myself in 50. So this is great. So I was just finishing up my third novel, and I thought, when I have three novels, then I can take them to a publisher, and they know that, I'm not a one-trick pony, that there's something that can follow. So I finished that up, and I decided I was going to put my house up for sale and move down to Florida to be closer to family members, and I love my house. So I thought...
It's very beautiful. I'm looking at it right now on eBay.
Oh, thank you.
I
thought to myself, goodness gracious, this economy, nobody's going to buy it. Light bulb moment. I've got to list all my home's assets. What's my most unusual asset? Well, my house is haunted.
Hmm.
So I included that with eBay. 1,600 people have watched my eBay ad, and it's called Haunted Kentucky Horse Farm for Sale. Pretty basic. And I'm real honest, and because I'm telling the truth, I will volunteer to take a lie detector test.
Really?
To show that, I am truthful. And I thought it would be pretty fun, too.
Now, have you taken a lie detector test yet?
No, I just put this eBay ad on a week ago, so.
Okay, yeah, I see that here.
Yeah, it's just been on a few
days. I'm looking through your pictures right now, so.
It's a lovely little 5-acre home. It really is. And it's very, very nice. And I'm asking $249,000 for it. And, if someone wants it and takes good care of it and we can come to a business agreement, great. and I'll give him a ghost tour once the check is cleared.
Now, you were telling me you have some people lined up to actually investigate this, correct?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I put that eBay ad, and the local media, Channel 18 Lee Searcy, she came out to do an interview. Lovely gal. Love the show. And, you know, after that, the ghost seekers have called me, and Kentucky Ghost Seekers, and they are coming out August the 7th at my home, and they're bringing some mediums, some psychics, and some technical equipment that I'm oblivious to the, you know, purpose of. Mm. And I think that's pretty exciting because I like some verification. And also there is an Ohio group that has contacted me and wanted to come out in late August. And I said, well, if the house isn't sold, please, you're welcome.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, this is all from eBay. You got all this.
Yes. I believe in eBay now.
There we go. And if anybody out there is in the shopping mood for a new home, there's a haunted horse farm for sale on eBay.
That's not a bad price.
The horse comes with horses come with it?
Oh, no, no. I've had my horse for 22 years. It lasted longer than my marriage. He's been nicer to me.
Yeah.
So you only have one? I was trying to see here.
I have two horses.
Okay,
I rescued. Is a rescue horse from the Kentucky Humane Equine Center in Nicholasville, which, you know, saves these beautiful horses from slaughter. And then I have my boy that I've had, gosh, he's 28. And he's just, you know, just a sweet old lame horse with no purpose other than to power nap and eat.
That's great.
All they need.
Hey, we're going to take a break really quick. And when we come back, I want to hear some of the ghost story that's going on in the haunted ghost or the haunted horse farm.
Good deal.
All right, you're listening to Whispers Radio on AM 1600, WKKX, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Former West Virginia Penitentiary housed some of the most violent criminals in history. Many of the prisoners who lived there also died there. It is known for being one of the most bloody institutions in the United States. Don't miss your chance to experience the former West Virginia Penitentiary. Your tour will consist of an astonishing 90 minutes that offers an awesome history, a touch of art, cold hard facts, and an education of the justice system. Tours start 11 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. For more information, go to www.wvpentours.com or call them at 304-843-4146. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, it's 866-514-1600. And that's a toll-free number if anybody out there wants to not pay to call. How's that?
You're so blunt.
Hey, I'm real.
Yeah. If there's any cheapies out there, just call.
Yeah, if you're a titan.
Don't blame that one on me.
Our guest tonight is Laura Cuttrett. She is an author of several fiction ghost stories, and she's living in a haunted house. She's getting ready to tell us what's going on. How you doing, Laura?
Oh, just fine, thank you.
Now, what's going on in this horse farm? What kind of stuff do you... What validates it as haunted? You said you'd take a lie detector test.
Yes.
What's solidifying your claim here?
Well, I have seen ghosts on numerous occasions on my farm, broad daylight, evening, early morning. They don't exactly have a 9-to-5 job. So because I'm telling the truth and I'm honest, I will definitely take a lie detector test. Sure, why not? I'm truthful.
Well, why would you, you know, why, well, I know why some people would come up with a story like that, but, you know, it's only going to add value if people believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, it gives credibility to what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
Also, you know, there are two theories going in this local area. On my street,
uh-huh.
Wheat School Road, there used to be a little schoolhouse, and it became a makeshift field hospital right after the Battle of Perryville. which many soldiers died.
Yeah.
And there is a lost Civil War cemetery somewhere on my street. Well, my new home here, you know, 7 years young, was put on a hayfield. So, there, you know, I didn't take over somebody else's house. This is a newbie.
Yeah.
So.
Well, just because the house is new, that ground could have spirits attached to it.
Yeah,
very well.
Yeah. They say when you build on a, you know, a haunted area and you start doing a lot of construction and stuff like that, that's when they really come out.
Yeah.
And they came out, it was like the first month I was here.
Well, yeah, they weren't happy. I can imagine.
No,
you know,
no, are they?
There has been some disturbing ones, yes.
Like
but
what?
Sometimes I've been very comforted by these spirits, very comforted, and it was a good thing.
Now, are you hearing voices? Is like your kitchen cabinet swinging open?
Well,
toys
the only
being
voice
played
I
with?
Ever say to myself is lose weight, Laura. But no, nothing gets moved around. I've heard some odd noises, strange noises that have woken me up, but I couldn't find the origin once I was awake or once I ran into the room to see what it was. But I've actually seen them. And
now, are you
several
living here by yourself?
Places.
Or
pardon?
Are you living there by yourself? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Though I did have a boyfriend over one time, and one came standing in my bedroom, and he walked right through it. I didn't say anything to him because I thought that would freak him out. But I thought, well, honey, you just missed the show. But now, 2.5 weeks, I guess it was 3 weeks ago, I had one that was extremely disturbing and upsetting, and it was a little bit unnerving.
What happened?
Well, this ghost was trying to come into my house and through my window, of all things, and he spoke to me, and he said, let me in, and I'm trying to close the window, and I'm pretty freaked out, and I looked at his hands, and they were all white, but, you know, you could see the definition is that he cut his fingernails short and everything,
mm-hmm.
And then he said, now get this, tell me when I can go back to work. And he was very confused, and then he went out into the side yard and kind of walked in a circle, like, you know, like Julie Andrews spinning on that mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just felt so bad for him, but I could make out every detail. If I was a good sketcher artist, I could still see what he looked like.
What kind of dress was he in?
He had regular, like, work boots, like a working-class guy, and long pants, and he had one of those blue jean shirts on. Button down the front and long sleeves, which, you know, for summer that was a little odd. And he had very short hair parted to the side and a long, angular face. I'd say he's a good 6'2".
Wow.
And he was older. He was older. And he was so sad and confused. And I said to him, hon, let me go. Just give me a minute. I'll go outside. So actually, I kind of chickened out and I sat in my bedroom for about 15 minutes. And then I got my nerve up, and the dog and I went outside with a flashlight and
you're
looked
much
around.
Braver
that was
than
it.
Me.
Now, when you say there was definition, was it kind of like a foggy, like you can tell it was a person climbing through, or was it like Nick breaking into your house?
It was like Nick if he lost all his pigmentation, all his color. His body was white.
Like Casper White, but not Misty.
Yes, clear as a bell.
Okay.
Yeah. If I was a good artist and I could sketch you a picture of him. And
wow.
I felt really bad that I freaked out on the poor guy because it was just sad. You know, I had this tremendous feeling of his anguish.
Now, have you seen that anymore?
Didn't know who
back?
He was. Didn't have the guts to look into the obituaries to see if it was recent. He hasn't been back.
What'd your dog do?
Well, she was asleep in the living room, and she ran into the bedroom probably because she, you know, because all the hustle and bustle was me. And then we went outside together half an hour later and looked around, and that was about it.
Because I have heard that animals can be sensitive to those kind of things.
Well, my last dog was. The new one that I've had for a year, it wasn't. But my other dog, Bridget Bardot, she was very sensitive when these things would happen.
Wow.
But since it's been happening so much and so often, sometimes Bridget used to sleep right through it.
Hmm.
You know.
See, because I live in an old house that was built probably at the turn of the 19th century. And, you know, I've never heard anything or had anything happen. But it stands to reason that there might be something hanging around, and every once in a while my cats or my dog will just, like, stop dead and stare up into a corner of a room. They don't really freak or anything like that, but, you know, all of a sudden they just become so still. Now, with a cat, they tend to do that anyway, but, you know, the dog, she's still kind of, she's a puppy. She's still a year and, only a year and a half old. So for her to, you know, zero in on something that I can't see anything there, you know, it just kind of freaks me out. But they don't, you know, they don't act like they're scared or anything like that. It's just all of a sudden they'll just stop whatever they're doing and stare off into a corner.
Now, so, I have had a relative come and visit me a few days after they passed away.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, how'd that work out?
Well,
I mean, maybe that came out wrong.
I don't think they were there to chastise me for missing the service, but
why weren't you there? But, like, I mean, how they
what'd they do?
How'd they show up? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't like a knock on the door. Hey, we brought some fruitcake.
Yeah, it wasn't welcome wagon. this particular one, and I don't want to say who it was because you know, this person has children and stuff.
Yeah.
Came through the wall and was right above my dresser and came towards me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did that person say anything?
No.
Just came, like, how clear was this vision or spirit? Was this as clear as the other gentleman?
Yes. Yes. Ooh. Yeah, I don't usually get the fog. I get things pretty darn clear. And pretty vivid, and, you know, I'm awake. When I was living in New York City, one came in and was right above my vanity and kind of hovering above, you know, the floor. And I got up on a chair to touch, and there was, you know, of course, I put my hand through, but I just had to do that once.
Let me tell you what I would have done.
Well,
I would have curled up in a corner. And cried.
He would have.
Like a baby.
It's sad. It's really sad.
Like.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, the first time, like one time this same thing happened and I was at my brother's house and thank God I had clothes on because, you know, his kid was in the other room. And when the spirit came in, I got up and I ran and I would have run naked down the street. I was so freaked out and so upset. But again, you know, this has happened so often, I've gotten used to it, and I have like a little routine. You know, what I do now, I don't know if anybody be curious, I usually sit up and I try to communicate with my spirit, ghost, guide, or whoever, and figure out who it is or why they're here. And sometimes I just wake up in the morning and they're standing there. I mean, they're right next to me.
What?
Yes.
That is nuts.
Now, did all this start after your near-death experience, or were you always sensitive to spirits? And it's
well, I heard stories about when I was a little girl what went on, and I put that in my second book, Throwaway Horses. So I don't really want to kiss and tell everything that had happened because I want to leave, you know, eventually have people, when I find a literary agent and publisher, read my stories. But... yeah, I've heard stories about when I was a little girl, and I remember seeing one spirit, but then it went for years, and I dismissed it, and then after I had my near-death experience, this started happening, and it went faster and faster and more, you know, like being on a runaway escalator.
Wow.
So, and, you know, I did go to a psychiatrist when this first happened that was absolutely dismissive. And then I went to a psychotherapist who tried to explain some stuff. And then I started my own research. And I found out these near-death experiences have been written through the centuries. And the type of psychic abilities I have are pretty, you know, this has happened to other people, so...
Now, you know, do you think that they're coming to you because you have the psychic ability, like that you are now opened up to this, so they're coming, you know, to you for a reason? Because it seems like after they die, you got the old man trying to break through your window, a relative coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think these are people passing and saying, oh, well, here's this person, let's go to her, and they flock to you because you can see them?
I think that's a 50% yes, 50% no. I've also had the same couple of spirits that have been dead for a long time come to me. And I've been able to communicate a little bit. And I'll ask questions, and one just said, "You're not that important."
Oh, my God. That's nice, being dismissed by a spirit. How,
I know. It's
God.
It makes you feel like the ugly girl on Saturday night.
I know.
It's like, well, I would talk to you, but
well,
I'm going
to
wait for this
guy.
At least
they talk to you. See, I really want the experience, and I get nothing. Nothing. So.
Well, if I had not had that horrible, horrific accident, I don't believe I'd even be on the phone or be a writer. So it's been a mixed blessing. I've gotten over the broken nose and hand and gotten something good out of this.
Yeah, you have.
But I have tried to put them, all of these, the psychic information, all the stories, like the last house in Covington Lane and the reincarnation of Tess Hamilton. Now, reincarnation is something that I blocked out for a very long time before I was able to accept my own reincarnation. I always figured, you know, if I lived 100 or 2 years ago, I was somebody's maid, you know?
All right, let's talk about
that
for a minute.
Now you really have me intrigued here because somebody she's moved from here, but she saw me in probably the like 1920s.
Wow.
And all my life, I have always felt like I am living in the wrong time period. That I should have been back in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. That to me is like the optimum time to live. And it was just freaky that out of the blue, she said, "Oh, yeah, I saw you coming down a grand staircase in this silvery, satiny dress, you know," and that was really a great vision, you know. But so tell me about this reincarnation.
My own?
Yes.
My own. Okay. And any listeners, if you want to research this, this would be great. Okay, in my past life, my name was Eleanor. I saw Eleanor's mother, and she told me that Eleanor was murdered in 1942 by a jealous ex-boyfriend or a jealous boyfriend. I forgot that part, you know, which one was
which.
Yeah,
yeah.
But she
matter.
Was murdered.
It was a guy.
I didn't get a last name, unfortunately, but I did see her. Mm-hmm. And she had red hair parted on the side, blue eyes, kind of smallish eyes, a little bit of a sharp pointed nose and chin, and she was a bit chubby, you know, like 25 pounds.
There is, you're not going to believe this. I'm in theater here in Wheeling.
Uh-huh.
There is a woman that was in a play with me 2 years ago, and she brought a picture that somebody had found. It's a painting, and that is exactly what that picture looks like. And it would have been painted sometime around in like the 30s or 40s.
Well, Eleanor was murdered in 1942, but I don't know how to, like, I tried to get on these databases and figure it out, but... You know, all I got was the first name, the cause of death, and I have a feeling, just a gut feeling, that it had to be a knife.
Wow.
But I can't, and I'll take a lie detector test for all of this to show that, you know, I'm just not making this stuff up. That's all the information I got.
Now, you said you talked to her mother.
Yes.
Is that spiritually talked to or telephone talked to?
No, the dead to the live connection.
Okay.
Yeah. It's her mom.
Yeah. She had big hair, too. She wasn't exactly a great beauty.
So, I mean, what did she say? You're my daughter?
No.
Like, how does this, like, she come?
I asked, you know, I did a meditation. Sometimes this felicitates this. Did a meditation. Who was I before I was me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then she came to me, and she had kind of big hair, and very, very sweet, very well-intentioned, and explained. And then later on, I was like, she communicated or gave me a vision of what I used to look like.
Hmm.
So I just wish I was an artist and could draw this. But I put all of these things, you know, into my last book, The Reincarnation of Tess Hamilton, is pretty close to it in what somebody remembering their past life would go through.
Have you gone to a hypnotherapist? Because there are people that can do past life regression.
No, I don't know anybody. And to tell you the truth, you guys, I have just basically come out of the closet about my psychic abilities in the last week and a half because I've been keeping a buttoned lip for 25 years over it.
Well, congratulations.
So I better, you know.
We're so glad we're your first.
Jeez. Well, I decided, because I'm a paranormal writer, why not just be honest?
Yeah, I don't blame you. You can give insight to you know, even fictional stories that someone that is not can't do. You know, did that make a lot of sense?
I mean, it's been truly, I believe I've had psychic help and new intuition in writing these books. I really, truly do. It's been a godsend. And if anybody wants to get a preview of my book, it's www.lura.com. So they could look at my website, learn a little bit about me and the ghost chronicles that I write, get a book preview, and then there's a connection to, you know, MySpace, Twitter, and all those social networkings that I'm learning about.
Are you on Facebook yet?
I'm a Facebook girl.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Because I finally got roped into that back in February, so now I'm on Facebook,
too.
It's
a new brave world of technology.
Yes, it is. It's scary.
It is frightening, and I'm turning 50, and I just need a 12-year-old to come over and do my computer stuff.
I know. It's like I call my niece or nephew, you know, come over and fix my DVR. I have no clue, so.
Oh, I don't even understand that stuff. But the kind of the interesting thing I think that I could give readers that a lot of people else, you know, couldn't get it, is I've had to live with the paranormal for so many years that I can draw and paint a picture, a different picture in my books and kind of tell it like it is.
Yeah.
That it's not so outlandish. Like I have fictional characters that have these psychic abilities, but they're pretty much rooted in me. And what I've been through. Now, I did have relatives that my great grandmother and a few uncles that had this too.
Really?
Yes, on my mother's side.
See,
and
it does
I can say that
family.
Because these people are dead and they're not going to sue me.
Wow.
you know, I think this, the wonderful thing about it, okay, the long and short, you know, my books, well, maybe they'll sell, maybe they won't. eBay, maybe my house will sell, maybe it won't. But what I'm left with is that I know there's a continuation after death, and I've seen it, and I know that there are positive, loving spirits that have kind of cradled and embraced me, and I feel blessed.
I would, too. I would, too.
Yeah, because you could be the other way around and not be a very happy individual.
Yeah, you could be cold and cynical and jaded.
Oh, no. I mean, it's kind of – I'm a little scared if I do sell the place. I mean – am I going to lose contact with them all? Are they going to all stay here? I don't know. There's
that
exactly
is a question.
A ghost 101 manual, you know, that you get when you're a psychic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of them are. Yeah, I'm kind of iffy on how I feel about the whole psychic thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so many out there that are just like
charlatans.
Wackadoos.
Yep. Yeah. But there are some that I've had personal experience with. Uh-huh. And I think one of the first things that I gauge everything by is, do they charge you? Is money involved?
Yeah.
If there is, then all bets are off as far as I'm concerned. But I've met some wonderful people in the last few years that I really believe are gifted. This is a gift for them, as much as sometimes they may not feel that it is. But, and I believe them.
When I was in my early 20s, you know, if I had the gift, I would say yes, but I want to refund it.
Yeah. Well, I know somebody told me, be careful what you wish for.
Oh, yeah.
I have a quick question for you. Someone in our chat room said, where did she live? Were you living in New York City or Kentucky?
Well,
I think they were a little unclear about that. So.
Yeah, I was born in upstate New York, and
okay.
I lived a lot of years in Ormond Beach, Florida, and then I live in Virginia, and then I went back up to New York City. So I've basically had an eclectic life, and I've been here over 10 years in Kentucky. I love Kentucky.
Isn't it a beautiful state? Oh, yeah. That's where my people are from, too.
And people are so nice here.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, most of my friends, I'd say 99% of the people in my life, had no idea that I was a psychic.
Well, that's not something I think that people, you know, really wear on their sleeve.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have business cards made up. Hi, my name's Lauren. I'm a psychic, you know.
Yeah, unless you're Sylvia Brown.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
but then again, so.
But, you know, some people have a lot more. I mean, I've got a little bit. Yes, I can see ghosts, and that's great and everything, but I can't move things, and there's a lot of things. You know, I never had the ghost come to me and say, hey, don't marry that guy.
You know what? No one saves us from those things. No one. But have they asked you ever, well, now, like the guy that wanted to know when he could go back to work.
Oh, it was so sad.
Have they asked you pointedly or even not to help them? Is there something that you get the feeling that they want you to help them with, perhaps?
He did.
To
get this particular man, oh, my God.
Well,
that
would have broke my heart.
It did. It's like sometimes from these different spirits, you'll get almost like a blast of emotion that envelops you. And a couple times it's not been good.
God, I want to come down to your house.
Pardon?
I want to come down to your house.
You're very welcome.
There we go.
Dinner. You know, stay today. I've got a pool, you know.
Oh, that's the best invite you've had in a while.
Yeah. Hey, I've got Netflix. We could watch a movie.
Invite the ghosties.
Really?
You know, I mean, I've sat up like sometimes and then like, you know, hoped it would happen, asked them to come, asked them for guidance. What should I do? You know, nada. And other times, they've answered. Oh.
Yeah. Now, where can we find your books?
Well, since I'm right in the middle of finding a literary agent, tackling them, and making them sign me in exchange for their life and freedom, I haven't even looked for a literary agent yet. I'm just joking. I haven't even put out my toe in the water because when I talked to a couple writers group, they said I had to have this huge following and internet footprint or no publisher will even look at my books.
I'll call you tomorrow. There's a place that I know of that you can go. And it would be a good starting point anyway.
Right. Thank you.
I'm on several shows here. It's like there are days I don't feel I ever go home. And we had an author on that had a publisher like that. So I'll call you tomorrow and give you the information because it's at home. I don't have it with me.
You know, it's sort of like getting a good boyfriend or a good marriage. You have to have just the right agent.
Right.
And that could appreciate, you know, what I write.
You know, and I'm really surprised that I would think that you would be very saleable because this is the hot topic now anyway. Somebody referred to it last week as the pop something, you know, of this time. So I'm really surprised. I would think that you'd be able to find somebody pretty easily.
Well, to tell you the truth, I hadn't tried before because I wanted to finish that third novel.
Yeah.
And I mean, these novels are not little skinny books. They're, you know, good 500 pages. And I think the best advice I got when I started to be a writer was don't write slow. I mean, it's action, action, action all the time. And a lot of twists and turns. And what I think is cool about it is I put in a sense of humor.
Well, that you need that. Given the choice of books, give me one that's going to – I want the serious subject, and I want really good characters. But I want one that's going to make me laugh. I want one that kind of – you know, the female character kind of talks the way I do and uses some of the language, you know, on a
She's
going
to have to be a crude broad.
No, I'm not crude.
Well, get on my webpage, you know, www.luracatch.com because you can see some of my book previews.
Okay.
And I just put these little excerpts in there so that people might enjoy out of the different books. And, and I try to explain the Ghost Chronicles. But you know how there's a lot of books where you have the 20-year-olds that are in love and blah, 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 blah.
Twilight.
Well, we've got some – I've got some ladies of a certain age that are over 40 that are interesting and colorful and have a romantic relationship with their husbands. And, you know, it's not all about the young love.
Yeah, good.
You know, I do have a love triangle, but it's a real unusual one.
Oh, sweet.
Between a ghost –
Well, I can't
don't
tell
know.
You all my secrets. But if I hadn't had these ghost encounters, I'd have nothing to write about. I'd had no good insights, and I'd be nothing special as a writer.
Well, I can't wait to get on your website and check that out. And like I said, I'll find that information at home and I'll call you tomorrow and give it to you. It's a place to start, cool. You know. So.
All right. The website is lauraketch.com. LauraKetch.com. You can find out about her books. What's going on with them? Can you purchase anything from your site?
No. I have everything copywritten, so it's safely secured legally.
Okay.
But I haven't gotten past that. I just finished the third novel about 4 weeks ago.
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
That's impressive. I'd like to finish a novel.
I'd like to start one.
I'd like to start an article.
I can't even blog, so. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I've got all my networks there, you know, my Facebook, my LinkedIn, and all those things. Figuring out how to do it, but I'm looking for followers.
Okay.
But my Twitter is Laura Ketchledge, KETCHLEDGE.
Okay.
So if somebody does the tweet thing.
No, I don't tweet on Twitter, so.
Well, listen, I can't even use the camera on my cell phone. So
there you go.
Well, I'll friend you on Facebook, and then you'll know who I am, okay?
Cool.
Thank you very much, Laura, for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been so much fun. Thank you.
We've enjoyed it. Thank you.
And I'll call you tomorrow.
Okay. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was. It kind of a little rocky there at the start, but.
Lola made a new friend.
Oh, I did. It's always so much fun when you get a thing.
Speaking of blogging, Lola.
Wants to be your friend. Don't speak to me about my blogging.
It's been 2 weeks.
I know.
And the only thing your site says is, I'm blogging now what?
Well, I'm waiting for the answer.
You got to keep doing it.
Oh, somebody email Lola, whispers1600@gmail.com, and tell her what.
Oh, you know, and every night I go home and that damn computer sitting there just staring at me, giving me all these bad vibes like, you should pick me up and open me. You should pick me
just
up and
write down how much you love us.
I know.
And then that'd be that.
Oh, my son keeps because he wants all the links to all of this stuff. And I keep saying, I'll do it tomorrow.
Poor fella.
I've got to get on there, too, because my ex-husband's sick. I need to message him with good wishes. I got to keep that connection going because he does live in Boca. So it's like I just need to keep that going. Oh, yeah, he's sick. He's a sickie, but I
hope he gets better. Who we got next week, Nikki?
All right, well, next week, just confirmed as people were looking online, we had Lawrence Joseph supposed to be going on tonight. A couple of problems, but he's going to be on next week, so we'll be talking about 2012.
Does he realize now? 3 p.m.
We have explained, we've both talked.
Okay.
We both know where we're at. Everything's good.
Stop blaming yourself. I'm sure he got it wrong. Well?
It was me. No, I don't know. But whatever happened.
You're too anal, Nick.
And
it wasn't you.
I am anal. And then we also have, I cannot think of his name. We're going to be talking about John Teeter, time travel.
Oh.
There's a couple of different people I've talked to from the place. That they're making a DVD about it, documentary. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Time travel. That really.
Let's do the time warp again.
Yay.
Nick is singing.
Oh, I gotta go watch Rocky.
I can't wait to get to the archives and cut that and make a song out of it.
No. but we're doing next week. And then, when are you gone?
Me?
Yeah.
On the 11th.
On the 11th.
So the week after next.
On the 11th is when we have the gentleman, Justin Blair, with the Transylvania. We got to get you on the phone.
You're going to have to call
in. Yes, I'll call in.
We got the documentary. It looks great. Very creepy. Did we bring that with us?
It's in my bag. I'll show Lola.
We'll have to get some popcorn together and start watching that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll talk about it. So, all right.
All right, everybody. That's all we got for this week. Check out our blogs. Everybody's blogging on that thing except for Lola. But she will be. She will be. Until next week, don't be afraid. Only believe.